This is the Roaring Athen podcast, and we're back again, continuing our coverage of the Perforce Open Logic State of Open Source report. Most of the juicy bits, I think, have passed already, but we're only at the half point of the report. So there's some more things to talk about. And obviously, I'm not doing this in my lonesomeness. I'll do it together with my ever partner, Dave.
Hello, hello, hello. Yes, I think the spiciest of topics are probably done, but there's still some little nuggets of intrigue here.
Yeah, and I just want to say the emails are in, and everybody agreed with me that Ubuntu is bad for our servers.
I think actually there was one
person.
I can't show
you the emails, by the way, because that's all privacy issue, GDPR compliance. I can't really show them to you, but just trust
me. There was one person, and I think they were a mental patient. They only had limited use of the computer.
I didn't send an email to myself. Come on.
And everyone else agreed that Dave was right. Anyway, moving on. Cloud native open source technologies is the next topic, at least the next one that we're going to discuss. We're not going to cover everything in here because there's some stuff here that's not really very interesting.
Or we don't know anything about.
Yeah. So, cloud native open source technologies, again, survey bias, lots of developers and engineers here. The number one technology used is, drumroll please, Docker.
That was a horrible drumroll.
60%. I know. I worked on the very worst drumroll I could. Yeah, Docker at 60%. Very, very unsurprising there.
Yep. And of course, followed by Kubernetes at 39, well, say 40%. So together, that's 100%. Everybody uses Docker, Kubernetes, and nothing else.
Yep. And, you know, when we're talking about Kubernetes, they do sort of give a little side graph where, you know, between 2021, Kubernetes usage was down at about 18%. Mm-hmm. 2022 is about 22% thereabouts. 2023, it's about 34%. And, and that was 2023. And, 2024, it's up near 40% now. So the rise of Kubernetes continues for better or worse.
But it's slowing down a little bit. The line isn't as straight as it was, which kind of makes sense. We've gone through a whole big adoption maturation phase for Kubernetes, I think.
Yeah.
Makes sense it still grows. Makes sense it grows less aggressively than it used to, because at some point you will get some saturation happening, obviously.
Yeah. And then sort of on down from there, there's a pretty big drop. Next one is Prometheus at 21%, 22%.
Of course, closely tied to Kubernetes.
Eh?
Prometheus is kind of the way of monitoring and metrics on Kubernetes. If you install Kubernetes, get Prometheus for free.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sad, weird that that's so low, because I would say that everybody running Kubernetes are using Prometheus to monitor it. So, but anyway, the bias.
They probably don't think about the fact that they're using it. It just comes bundled with it.
Yeah.
Possible. Yeah. Sorry, I completely misheard what you said. That's why I asked the question. Podman at about 20%, sort of similar. The only real thing that I would call out as a little bit odd here is that 15% of folks not using any cloud native technologies.
I think that's not unreasonable.
Yeah.
Everything has to go to the cloud.
There's a lot of cloud native technologies out there. I don't know. I'm surprised that people aren't using any of it. Anyway.
Again, a big part of this was government.
Yeah,
and
true.
And government, for a big part of it, isn't allowed to go to cloud still. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, but you can still use things like Docker. You don't need to be in cloud.
But again, you're talking
to
one
Docker
developer here. And if the developer's in the team that does the air gap stuff or the on-prem stuff, then he will say, I have nothing running in the cloud.
Even though he's using Docker on his laptop.
Well, would he? Yeah, he would probably. He's probably running Kubernetes in his own data center as well. So, but would I? Okay, when I was saying cloud native technology, I would think it would have to run in the cloud, but that's a bias on my end.
No. Yeah, right. Anyway.
Weird.
People answer surveys strangely. It's a well-known phenomenon.
All right, a bit up from the open source OpenShift. Sadly, OpenShift itself isn't in the list because that's not an open source project anymore, apparently. Range of 10%. Again, a bit weirdish. Although that, of course, comes because no range is from SUSE, right?
But you can
run it everywhere you want, obviously. It's not a problem. But SUSE will push it on their own stuff. On the other stuff, you will have to get it yourself. But I think this does mean that OpenShift is still used a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, OpenStack is up at sort of just under 15%. Mm. And Cloud Foundry down at 6%. So if you're talking about kind of big frameworks. Oh, yeah. And sorry, OKD, the open source OpenShift, is down at 4.5%. So of the bigger sort of frameworks, you know, they're significant, you know, very, very, very significantly behind Kubernetes, unsurprisingly.
Well, they're just managing platforms for Kubernetes, right? You still run Kubernetes underneath them. You can't have a rancher without Kubernetes under it.
Yeah, but I was talking about sort of Cloud Foundry, for example, and other things like that.
Yeah, Cloud Foundry. I think that's legacy these days. I don't think many people are still making new stuff on that. I would hope, because I haven't heard anything from them in like forever.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that does find remarkable is that Podman is at 20% and Docker at 60%, while, correct me if I'm wrong, Google, or whoever the overlords of Kubernetes are now standardizing on Podman. And I've had a lot of customers that migrated from Docker to Podman over the last year, 2 years. But still, that much more Docker's. Looks like Docker is here to stay, and the newfangled kid isn't replacing them anytime soon.
Yeah, again, survey bias. There's still a huge number. I think you'll probably see a lot more Podman used in conjunction with Kubernetes as the default container from, you know, now. But in terms of developers doing things, you know, locally, there's still a heck of a lot of folks just using Docker for that.
Why? You have container D. That's all you need. C groups are all everybody ever needs. All the rest is fluff.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell. So, you know, going back a little bit into our sort of our history here, there's a bit of a diversion here that talks about cloud native and container usage for companies handling big data. And I don't really know what it is that they're trying to suggest with this, but the sort of the numbers are broadly similar, really. The number of organizations using a Docker or Kubernetes or OpenStack or Podman, it's just ever so slightly less. It's like more big data companies are using these things than non-big data companies, but particularly similar.
Maybe you can look at it another way. And you might have the expectation that Kubernetes and Docker and stuff like that is only used by big data companies because they have the big data, they need the frameworks, microservices, things like that. And if you don't have big data, you don't really need this stuff because it's way too complicated, which this graph would then disprove. If that is what they mean with the graph, I don't know.
Actually, your interpretation might make sense, because the only one that is...
That's high praise from Dave, by the way.
Because the only one that where there is a significant difference here is OpenStack, which is 30% of big data companies apparently use that, and only 15% or so of all companies are using it. So, Docker is up there in the 65-ish%. So seeing OpenStack down there a lot lower. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Curious. But, you know, folks, when asked about the challenges with using cloud native technologies, very, very unsurprising, you know, personnel experience and proficiency with these technologies is the number one at 27% pretty much, which absolutely makes sense. These technologies moving quickly all the time, like relentless progress, which is amazing to see, but it, I'm sure, is absolutely terrifying to try and keep up to date with how these things are evolving, and is you know, an ongoing challenge for folks in this space.
Yeah, I mean the top four are all the same thing basically: be it personal experience, not enough people, personnel, installation upgrades, configuration issues, keeping up with updates and patches. That's what you say, right? And the whole the breakneck speed. We should tap the brakes a little bit here. And when I say we, I'm talking about IT. What's the word I'm looking for? Information technology companies, vendors, because all software companies are so quick in adding new stuff and hyping this and hyping that. At some point, you have to kind of wait a minute and make what you have good before you build on top of it. And at the moment in the world, it's my what I feel is that stability is undervalued and innovation for the sake of innovation is overvalued a lot. And it kind of discourages some people from actually starting to try and work with stuff like this, which is probably why the 15% no cloud native tools at all might also be found a little bit in. I mean, innovation is good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just that sometimes you wonder, and look at all this whole AI craze now. My toothbrush has AI. Why? Doesn't make sense at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, but I don't see this trend.
Oh, no.
I don't see this train slowing down. This train is only accelerating.
Yeah, but if this is already problematic at this point, what's it going to be next year, in 5 years? Although, okay, of course, then at some point, agentic AI will just do it all for us.
Exactly. AI will save us all, apparently.
Time to learn.
Gosh, that's another rabbit hole we're not going to dive down.
Actually, that's a good point, actually, because this survey doesn't touch on AI all that much, to be honest. That's quite refreshing.
Yeah, true. But that does mean, obviously, that hardly anyone will have read it, because people are only reading things about AI now.
People don't read it anymore. They ask AI to summarize it.
This is also true. Hence the service that we're doing here. Anyway, we're basically like the world's worst AIs, just doing a terrible job at summarizing everything. There we go.
At least we're a coprocessor. We're dual core.
Yeah, dual core.
Don't ask our megahertz.
Core 2 Duo, 0.1 megahertz. Anyway.
I can't say that anymore, because the Core 2 Duo is now a Pebble Watch.
I honestly think the Pebble Watch is probably a lot more powerful than a Core 2 Duo.
No, it's called that now again. The creators of Pebble has the trademark again, and he used to make the watches again under the name Core Duo, and now it's the Pebble Core Duo or something.
Dear.
Total side angle. Never mind. Moving on.
Moving on indeed. You wanted to talk about programming languages and runtimes.
Oh, God, he's skipping graphs. Now I have to find where he was in. Oh, I'm there already. I'll talk about it. It's just good to see that good old JavaScript is still up at the top at 53%. All good. It used to be Python at the top. No, JavaScript has leaped over again. They still have been playing leapfrog for quite a while now. But Python and JavaScript at the top. PHP still very healthy at 37% as well, even though everybody keeps saying PHP is dead and bad. People do keep using it and making fun stuff with it. Node.js a bit lower down. But if you look at the full graph of it, it looks like scripting languages are way outpacing actual compiler languages. C# is like the first compiler language. I'm not talking about Java, because Java is also compiled, but it's that newfangled thing. And C# is only 15%. But of course, in bias of developers might look at this stuff. Well, developers will do both compile languages and scripting languages. DevOps engineers will only look at scripting languages, so typical, you expect scripting languages to become out on top. But that being said, totally undermining my point, C, C++, the old granddaddy, older than me, still up there at 28.50%, outpacing OpenJDK by less than 1%, but still outpacing.
And shout out to Perl down at 10.3%.
I love me some Perl.
Yeah, exactly. That is, I think, oh, I don't know, actually. Either Perl or Fortran. Fortran's not here. Where's Fortran?
In universities.
Either Perl or Fortran are probably the languages I did most production, actual production development on. And yes, that suggests how old I am. Anyway, moving on.
No Pascal? No COBOL? No. Mother 2, are there?
No.
That's my youth.
Fortran. Lots of Fortran 77.
I'm missing Rust here. That's a program language, isn't it?
No, it's there.
Oh, it's there. I said I was missing it. I wasn't seeing it. And now I see it. It's even less than Oracle Java. Oracle Java being well below OpenJDK. 28% OpenJDK, Oracle Java 15%. I would say that's a sad thing, but I think Oracle really deserved it.
Yeah, and I think this, going on to like the next thing, which is this sort of trade-off between OpenJDK and Oracle Java, I think this is fantastic to see. You know, between 2022, Oracle Java was, you know, more prevalent, had about a 10% lead at about 26, 27% thereabouts. 2023, things kind of, they were sort of neck and neck, about 22 and 23% with OpenJDK just about having the lead. And 2024, OpenJDK really kind of took the lead pretty significantly at about 27%, with Oracle Java being down at about 15%. And obviously now OpenJDK nearly 30%. So not quite as rapid a growth anymore. But I think it's great to see people kind of shifting to OpenJDK, and the fact that OpenJDK has become over the years a solid, credible alternative to Oracle Java. I think it's great to see.
I mean, for a long time already. I mean, there's always an adoption curve. People need to be convinced that it is a valid alternative. But in my whole career, I have never used Oracle Java to program something. I've used Oracle Java runtime to, when I download a Java application, it just downloads that thing as well, but that's just a free download. But whenever I've developed something, it's always been OpenJDK.
Yeah, I did spend some time before OpenJDK existed. I did some Java development.
That's not
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't enjoy it. It was terrible.
I didn't enjoy OpenJDK either. I hate Java. I hate Java.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like developing at all. So, world's worst developer, right here.
C-sharp is so much better. Send angry emails to wedontcare@oracleelements.com.
All right, let's see if we can squeeze one more topic in. And do you want to talk about open source data technologies?
Well, I can do my tirade again about why having MySQL and MariaDB has two separate entries there, because they're basically the same software-ish. And if you add them together, they would outpace Postgres by a lot. But as it is, they're still separated, and Postgres is the king of the hill at 51%.
Indeed. Indeed.
Apart from that, it's is Hadoop still in there somewhere? They put it sideways. So yes, we're at 9.57%. Apache Hadoop still there. Yay. I do love me some Hadoop. I mean, Hadoop has been a very pivotal thing in my life. So it'll be sad when it's no longer on the graph.
I mean, let's see. There's some Apache Flink there as well that, you know, 2.6%. So I think it'll be a while before it drops off entirely. You'll probably see it for a few years yet.
Park 12%.
Yeah. Actually, like talking about the challenges that folks are facing using some of these. They do pick out a couple of these data technologies specifically. So they pick out Kafka and Hadoop and compare that with all other data technologies. And they looked at three major things, like the challenge of keeping up with updates and patches, commercial support costs, and scalability. And I mean, unsurprisingly, Kafka and Hadoop are more challenging for all of those things. But you know, there's not a massive amount of difference between between the scalability and the keeping up with updates and patches. It only really seemed to be that most people, like, what was it, 15% of people thought that commercial support cost was a challenge for all technologies, whereas it's up in the, you know, 31% for Kafka and, you know, 39%-ish for Hadoop. People think that commercial support costs are a challenge. So, yeah, it makes sense. A lot of the other technologies are relatively commoditized. Kafka and Hadoop still pretty specialized. There's only a relatively small group of folks that are providing commercial support for those sort of things. So it's a bit more of a specialized area.
Yeah, also expectation management, I think. A lot of people start with Hadoop and Kafka because it's free. And then they start playing with it and they discover the hidden costs, the one we talked about a couple of episodes back. I mean, it's not because you don't pay a license for it that it's free. You still have to maintain it yourself. So if you expect it to be free and then it costs a significant amount of money, you will be overly dissatisfied, conversely, compared with getting a Postgres database in and knowing you're going to have a partnership with a support organization from day one because you don't expect it to be free. But I think your point is also very valid, by the way.
Yeah, indeed.
I do want to go back one, though. One thing that I just noticed here is that Neo4j is dropping in usage. If you look at 2023 was the first graph we had, it was 16%. A year later, it was down to 7%, and now it's down to 4%. And Neo4j is kind of, I mean, if you want to do GraphDBs, traversal queries, you got Neo4j. There's nothing else on this list that even comes close to doing something GraphDB-ish. So this would mean that GraphDB's in general usage is dropping at a precipitous pace, I think the word is. It surprises me.
Maybe.
Because the whole social media stuff is all based on graph technology.
Yeah, I think, again, there's a lot of survey bias here because I'm seeing a lot of people using graph databases for things.
It just drops down over the 3 years. I mean, it was 1 year up, 1 year down, we're up, bias, yes, but this is a trend, regardless of the bias.
Yeah, but again, it's still the people that are responding to the Perforce OpenLogic
survey. Going from 16% to 4% in 2 years' time, that is significant regardless of...
Maybe.
I mean, that's just something I noticed because GraphDBs are a bit of a hobby of mine. I like traversal queries. I just don't have a lot of reasons to play with it. It's pretty much just what I'm saying.
Fair enough. Well, I think at that point, we should wrap things up once more. And I think that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon, and every contribution really does help us. We are no longer on YouTube, boohoo, unfortunately, but, you know, we're still here on the airwaves, and you can listen to our glorious voices every week. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org, especially feedback that says Jon is wrong. Until next time. My name is Hadoop. It's not that difficult, surely. Dave?
And my name is Lost in the Graph. Jon.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.